Very good morning to everyone. Really happy to be I could bring to the discussion. After all, I'm really only 7 months into this new job as a politician, and my current portfolios actually do not directly cover this topic, at least not on the surface. But, you know, I have a good opportunity to not talk about transport issues for a change. So quite refreshing to come and try something new. And more importantly, actually, I have a learning opportunity today from the esteemed panel, you know, Razwana, Elaine, and Sharani, all three experts in this area. Actually, I'm really looking forward to learning from them. And, of course, from all of you, too, because just met quite a few of you. And there are many distinguished people in the audience today who are much more equipped to speak about this topic. Now, I'm going to start by saying that I joined politics because I love Singapore. I know it sounds a bit trite, maybe not so trite for this audience because you are here also because you're interested in the future of Singapore, but I joined politics because I love Singapore. I love Singapore because I know I'm lucky to be born here, that I can do all these things and be who I am because of the place I was born in, and if it was a different place, a different system, it would have been a very different outcome. And having this opportunity now to be able to contribute and give back to Singapore, I decided to play my part. And one of the best parts and the most beautiful parts of Singapore is that it is a multiracial, multi-religious, multicultural nation. Many of us, maybe I don't think I'm the exception, we took this for granted growing up. My first day of school in primary one was a struggle because I didn't speak any English on the first day. The person, a teacher in her infinite wisdom, put a Malay boy on my left and an Indian girl on my right. So my first day was extremely traumatic because I could only use sign language and Hokkien to try to communicate. But it was no bother because in the end we figured it out, and in the end we managed to get through, and now I have many friends from different walks of life. We didn't think anything growing up about having friends of different, you know, races or religions, whether it was work, whether it was school, whether it was my Sunday football team. You know, we're all part of the same group. But over the years, I learned in the course of my work that this was not organic. In fact, it was the outcome of deliberate and conscious effort, and it meaning racial religious harmony, that thing, the special thing that we take for granted in Singapore. On this panel, I agree with the premise that Singaporeans hold multiple identities, that we have a national identity, we are Singaporean, but we also have ethnic, religious, linguistic affiliations and others. I'm Chinese, I'm also Buddhist, as I mentioned, I speak Hokkien as my first language, and as I was reminded because I attended this 125th anniversary of the Fuzhou Association, I'm also Fuzhou in dialect, although I can't speak it, my parents use it when they don't want me to be hearing what they are saying. But identities, of course, also evolve. Personally, I've become less religious over time, although this is actually in the opposite direction of Singaporean society. And now, because of work, I speak mostly English, although Hokkien comes in useful every now and then. Actually, Mandarin is my third language, but don't tell anyone. With each subsequent generation of Singaporeans, national identity has strengthened. I look at my kids, I know they feel very much more Singaporean, and even then, this is not something to take for granted. An IPS survey, I think 2024, which SM Lee mentioned some time back, over a third of respondents ranked nationality as most important, but two-thirds ranked race, religion, country of origin, etc., as their most important identifier, as the most important part of the identity. So the journey is not complete. Neither is the journey linear. Alternative affiliations are also emerging because of immigration, because of higher inter-ethnic or international marriages, or generally because that Singapore has been an open society for a long time, taking in new ideas, new people, new paradigms. In Singapore, we do want people to preserve these varied and alternative affiliations. We do. For example, food. We love the fact that we have people from all over the world, people who feel affiliations from all over the world. We love the fact that our food is varied and fantastic and multicultural and from different sources. And it's a good example of how what binds us together is not just our commonalities, but it's in fact also our differences. But it is not easy to keep this balance. It's not easy, especially when we are open and connected. It's not easy, especially when we have disagreements and conflict. And it's not easy because Singapore is a small country and we are very easily affected by what happens around us. The government plays a very critical role to maintain social cohesion. Sometimes it is very obvious. You know, we have things like Racial Harmony Day. My kids always complain, you know, you have to do this. HDB ethnic integration policy is another very obvious way of intervention, direct way. And sometimes it is less obvious. But the general approach that the government has is to create common spaces and common conversations. Common spaces is how our people encounter diversity in daily life. And I promise this is the only time I'm going to mention transport, but our housing policies, our neighborhoods, our schools, our parks, our public transport system, our community facilities are designed for people to share, to come together, to live, work, and play together. These common experiences help to build a shared sense of identity. They encourage interaction and mingling across different groups, and this is intentional. And in many HDB estates, you will always have a mosque, a church, and a temple, usually situated close together. And when you have this deliberate mixing strategy across different groups, there will be differences in perspectives from time to time. And so common spaces must also go together with common conversations. This is where we do a lot of work on the ground. The grassroots leaders are absolutely critical. For my constituency in Choa Chu Kang, we have a higher proportion of minorities than elsewhere in Singapore. So we work very hard to make sure that we listen to the ground, that we are able to accommodate different views, and that we are sensitive to the views of different groups. And we create opportunities for groups to hear from one another whenever there's an issue to be discussed or if there's a conflict. We have this thing called harmony circles, which I am not sure if the audience is familiar with, but basically these are curated opportunities for religious leaders to come together with grassroots leaders to build bonds during peacetime. We interact over all sorts of opportunities. Recently, we had a durian party, and I realized I was the only person who had no religion with durian. Everybody else was happily tucking in. And these are opportunities for people to get to know each other during peacetime so that when conflict arises, there is an existing relationship, there's trust and understanding, and there's the will to work together. So when issues, even when they're outside of our GRC, for instance, the recent issues last year at the mosque in Serangoon and the church in Bukit Timah, the harmony circles came together very quickly to mobilize the community, to provide support, and to convey well wishes. At the national level, of course, we take such issues very seriously. I don't need to say too much about that. But our senior politicians, including PM, including SM, we come together very often to do closed-door dialogues with the grassroots leaders. Preserving social cohesion is also an unending task. There will be new fault lines and new divisive forces. I mentioned increased religiosity in Singapore. That's the impact of social media. But I want to highlight one which particularly concerns me and worries me, and that is the demographic realities that Singapore faces. Our TFR is abysmal, it's at 0.94 now. 2024 last year, or rather the year before, far below the replacement rate. And the truth that we have to confront is that immigration is crucial to retain the dynamism of Singaporean society and the economy. But immigration can only go as far as integration allows. And we can only stay open and welcoming to newcomers if we are able to integrate them well. And so I think we do need to do a better job with integration, to do more so that we can do more immigration. Let me repeat that in case I mentioned it. We need to do more with integration so that we can do more immigration. And how do we do this? We need to make newcomers feel Singaporean, but also make Singaporeans feel that newcomers are Singaporean. In theory, Singapore is a young immigrant nation. So why is this difficult? Maybe it is because we are young. Maybe it's because we don't feel secure enough about what it means to be Singaporean. And it is natural to have a us and them attitude. It's natural and harder, rather, to forge understanding and trust with newcomers when they come from much more diverse backgrounds than they used to. But I think all sides will have to make an effort, an extra effort. Newcomers need to consciously want to integrate, contribute to the community, abide by our norms, and understand what it means to be Singaporean. And Singaporeans have to be open-minded too, to accept that the identity that we have today will evolve, and to be understanding that it takes time for newcomers to adapt to our local customs and practices. As S. Rajaratnam once said, ultimately, being Singaporean is not about ancestry, it's not about where you are born, but it's about choice, conviction, and contribution. And I believe very strongly in that. As we manage our fundamental fault lines of race and religion, another fault line must be also managed, which is that of income inequality. The government is focused very much on this, and in particular, we work very hard to support lower income groups and to strengthen social mobility. And by supporting those who are more vulnerable, we reduce the risk of social fractures and reinforce the sense that we are all progressing together as one society. But this is an unending task. It is a difficult task, maybe more difficult than it was during my time when I was growing up. In summary, the Singapore identity is complex and evolving, but it also has to be carefully nurtured and managed. But we are focused on this, and I think we are going in the right direction. Thank you very much.